This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Tuesday, and privileged to be joined by Tom Drowdy, who's who contributes to the program frequently, and very, very fortunate to have him, and always enjoy having his sage-like wisdom on the program, and today's no different from that. So, first of all, Tom, thanks for doing this again, and thanks for being part of All Marine Radio.
You're most welcome. Honored to be here, and looking forward to chatting with you, as always.
All right. I wanted to have you on because of your sage-like of your sage-like thought. And I think a lot of Americans were bothered by the news conference that they watched from Helsinki. On the program on Monday, I took President Trump's initial statement, which is, President Putin's initial statement, and then President Trump's initial statement, and then we started talking about them. Did not take the Q&A portion of it. I made the remark that I thought that was the most I've ever seen him stick to a script in his life. However, I think that the whole nation has reacted to something that I think the president does very poorly. If I were to defend him, and if he did it deliberately, then I would I'd say there's a huge problem. So I wanted to have you on to talk about have you talk about these things. But before I do that, I want to talk about kind of his trip. He went to the United Kingdom first, and met with had dinner with Theresa May, and then met with the Queen of England. The quote that after those meetings, the quote that kind of rocked the Sunday news shows was the EU is a foe. And so what I want to do is I want to play the clip. I want to get your thoughts to it, and then I want to talk about a couple of topics and get your thoughts on it. So
this is
about 24 seconds of an interview that he did with the CBS News.
Well, I think we have a lot of foes. I think the European Union is a foe, what they do to us in trade. Now, you wouldn't think of the European Union, but they're a foe. Russia's a foe in certain respects. China's a foe economically, certainly. They're a foe. But that doesn't mean they're bad. It doesn't mean anything. It means that they're competitors. They want to do well, and we want to do well.
All right. So when you listen to the whole quote, And the things that he says, and the way he ended up, and I don't intend to be an apologist for the president, but the whole statement is a little bit different from the headline. I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think you hit exactly on it. As we were talking earlier, we have a tendency to substitute news for bumper stickers. And that headline, that attempt by editors primarily to capture the essence of a story in just a few words can be deceiving, especially if that editor is focused on something that's shocking, surprising, titillating, because in many cases that's as far as some people will read. And that's where they go. And it's, I think the other part that is difficult is that I think Socrates once said that how many arguments could be deflated to a single paragraph if we simply defined our terms. And the president did define that foe was not someone that you're fighting with. He said he defines foe as a competitor, and it gets back to the thing that we had to chat about earlier, and that is that nations have interests. Now, sometimes they have friends, but friends have a way of coming and going, but the interests of a nation are those lasting things that cause the nation to, among other things, go to war, or to exert economic sanctions, pressure, use of information, diplomacy, those elements of national power, the dime that we refer to, of diplomacy, information, the military, and economics, those are the interests that every nation has and wants to protect and promote and so forth. And along the lines of that, there may be friends, but as we know, friends can sometimes come and go. And I think the problem that so many people have is we mix up friends with interests. And what the president, I believe, was saying is that if you consider a foe to being define a foe as a competitor, then those who have competing interests with you are individuals or countries that are going to be engaged in order to do what is best for the various countries, in the case of ours, best for the United States. So I think that's what, and again, I'm not trying to be an apologist for the president, but you know, just going a little bit deeper than what the headline reads, I believe is useful not only in this case, but in much of the news when so oftentimes it's just presented out there as a way of grabbing interest for a short period of time and then allowing people to go on to the sitcom or back to their iPad or to, you know, whatever that they think is of more interest. So long answer to your question there, Mac, but that's my take on the use of the word foe, and then the also put in that Russia and China. Again, not necessarily going to war with them, but they are in fact competitors, and I don't think anyone would deny that.
Well, you know, and I've heard him say, and again, he doesn't need me to apologize for him, but the one thing I do feel strongly about, and I've always done in doing radio programs, is I think the truth is important. I think the footnoted, annotated truth is important and not something that serves to either inflame your antagonist or protagonist, either one. And so I have no interest in that, but the truth is, I think, is important. I've heard him make those statements about President Xi. I have a great relationship with him, but at the end of the day, he is running China, and I'm the President of the United States. We have different interests. We're going to disagree. Now, I mean, he says that, and then he just slapped 200 tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. And so I think that you know, the president has said these kind of things before in terms of being, hey, I have a great relationship with him. He's a wonderful guy, but he's in charge of China. And he's gonna play China's hand, not America's hand. And we shouldn't expect him to. So I think that's somewhat real politic. His criticism of NATO, the backdrop, we have had, you know, presidents, I want to say going back to Bill Clinton, so it would be post-fall of the Soviet Union, that have admonished NATO and NATO nations and said, hey, you need to, you know, you need to hit our targets. You need to sustain your military spending, because if history teaches us a single lesson, it's the way to avoid war is to be strong. And the Western democracies have flouted that historical axiom. I'm curious about your thoughts on his criticism of NATO. Valid criticism, and again, his style aside, because I think we would all agree that, yeah, you know, maybe his style isn't the best, but I believe that his style has been the catalyst that has pushed NATO in the appropriate direction so that NATO can avoid war. I'm curious your thoughts on it. Is his criticism on the mark? Do you think he's nudged them, or do you think NATO was headed there anyway, or what do you think?
I think he's been a catalyst for the movement that is necessary. And, you know, previous presidents have raised this in a, you know, kind of quiet diplomacy way. And it's almost, team, we're all this together, so won't you do your part? And then with that, the subject is kind of dropped, like it's bad manners to raise the fact that it's like a dinner tab and everybody has a portion of it, and some people are not paying their portion. So the person who is paying the most, you know, quietly says, you know, this isn't what we agreed to, but, you know, to just keep peace in the at the table, I'll continue paying the bill. And we now have a president who said, hey, wait a minute. This is a great organization. NATO, you know, really makes sense. But it can only exist when people live up to their responsibilities. They've got to be accountable for their commitments. And to have a country, you know, and he's put in the sights very much Germany in this case, you know, with the GDP that it has and the fact that they are laggards as far as their commitment. Now, apologists for that will say, well, they've made other commitments to NATO, you know, personnel of one kind or other. I understand all of that, but that wasn't the deal. The deal was 2% of GDP, and so far only five countries have met that. So the movement now in that direction, and everyone agrees that now there is movement in that direction, I believe was brought about by the president, who rightfully, forcefully, dare I say, undiplomatically, took to task the fellow team members of NATO and said, come on, gang, this is what we agreed to. It's time to put up. And I think that is right and proper, and I think it's had the desired result.
Interesting. So that takes us to Helsinki. And I think for many people that have been watching, a lot of people have been very, very interested in the president's first major interaction with Vladimir Putin. And I think his detractors, were probably relishing this moment, because Mr. Putin is no stranger to adult games in the diplomatic area. And it's not something I believe President Trump does well. Vladimir Putin seems to do it probably as well as anybody on the planet. I'm going to read you some headlines from the Washington Post. Banner headline, Trump offers little pushback in Putin's denial of interference. Number two, Trump cast doubt on U.S. intelligence findings that Russia interfered in the 2016 election. Another headline, the moment called for Trump to stand up for America, he chose to bow. Disgraceful, shameful, Trump's defense of Putin finds few supporters in Congress. Even Republicans have shied away. I'm curious, did you watch the Q&A? And if so, what did you think?
Yeah, and again, the criticism is bipartisan, including Senator McCain and others with their condemnation. One was Newt Gingrich, who said it was the worst mistake of President Trump's presidency. So, you know, strong criticism in this regard. I think once again there is the expectation on the part of many that this meeting was going to result in President Trump calling to task President Putin for the meddling in the election. The fact that that didn't take place is, I think, is part of the outrage. You know, aside from, you know, making us look weak, et cetera. I have a tough time with all of that. I wish that the president was a better ad libber. He does better when he is, you know, on script. But you know, this is not new that he's had, his issues with the intelligence community and you know, can trot out again, all 17 of them have come to the conclusion that there is there's meddling on the part of Russia and the Mueller investigation of indicting a number of the Russians in that regard. All that, what I find interesting, though, Mac, is this this belief on the part of some that that the meddling in the 2016 election was orchestrated at a minimum, or at a maximum, but at a minimum had involvement in the cooperation of then-candidate Trump and his minions. And I guess taking that further down the line, if that had been the case, and you could say, all right, then it worked, although I think there was more than just some meddling on the part of Russians that convinced particularly mid-America that candidate Trump was the one they wanted as president. But let's suppose that a great deal of it was because of the Russian meddling. Do you really think that now President Trump would now appear to be as friendly towards Russia? I mean, to throw off any indications of conspiracy, collusion, et cetera, I think there would be the hard line in order to kind of dissuade critics from saying, oh, well, you've cozied up to the Russians because, after all, they helped you win the election. Somehow that logic just doesn't track in my mind, and it just seems counterintuitive. Don't know what your thoughts are on it, but getting back to the press conference and response, I think that's what is causing a great deal of difficulty is the expectation and the belief that this was a chance for the president to hammer President Putin, and he did not. For whatever reason, and I just have to think that he had his reasons, but they were not explained well, and as a result, a great many people are having a field day in the area of criticism.
Tom, I'm going to play about 3 minutes of audio, and these are major moments in the press conference, and it'll include the moment when both supporters and critics of the president say that he shrunk. And then I want to talk to you on the backside about this, about when you're a high-ranking government official and you war game this, which I would, there's no way that I would think that they didn't go over questions that they knew that he would be asked in the press conference and what the appropriate response would be, and what to certainly stay away from. So I want to talk to you about that. But let me play, here's a little bit of the audio from the press conference that President of the United States and Vladimir Putin gave in Helsinki on Monday.
Tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
All I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be. I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer. The probe is a disaster for our country. I think it's kept us apart. It's kept us separated. There was no collusion at all. Everybody knows it.
As to who's to be believed and who's not to be believed, you can trust no one if you take this. Where did you get this idea that President Trump trusts me or I trust him? He defends the interests of the United States of America, and I do defend the interests of the Russian Federation. We should be guided by facts. Could you name a single fact that would definitively prove the collusion? This is utter nonsense.
What happened to the server? What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked on the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they?
All right. We'll stop there. Tom, your thoughts on that? It's painful, honestly, in my opinion, painful to listen to. President Trump at his worst, ad-libbing in a press conference and not able to stay away from not able to stay away from running his mouth when he probably should just be silent. And I think his statement about Dan Coats coming to him and telling him that our intelligence points to the Russian GRU as having attempted to interfere in our election. I looked the president in the face and I asked him. He's denied it. And then end of story right there.
Yeah. A couple of things. A little stronger talk by Coates. It was more than he came to me and he thinks it's the Russians. I believe it was a bit stronger than that. So that, cheating was not useful. He started off thinking that any politician, just like any instructor, anyone who's going to make a presentation or is going to be before the public, and has the wherewithal, even if it's there are just one or two people, does what we call in the Marine Corps murder board, and that is where you make a presentation or you try to preview what the scenario is going to be, and the murder board asks those questions that could probably, possibly, in all likelihood, are going to come up. The obvious ones, the not so obvious ones, the insulting ones. I mean, all of those, so that when it goes for real, it is not being heard the first time, and therefore the answer that would be appropriate has been constructed. And I'm not saying you're making up lies in this regard. You're just simply anticipating what questions are going to be asked, informing with people, and the names that come to my mind are General Kelly and his National Security Advisor John Bolton, among others, who would say, here are the things, along with their staffs, of what's going to take place. Did that happen? Yeah, I would sure hope so. I mean, that's something you learn fairly new in at least our previous profession, Mac. But if it happened, it appeared that something didn't quite click, because I'm certain that some of these questions were asked in that murder board or in that preparation. I think that once again, our president has a challenge when it comes to the spontaneous answers, the ad-lib responses that sometimes we wish, I'm sure that he wishes as well, could be done over or redone. But I think it also gets into, once again, it sounds like the old broken record business, but the area of interest that the president mentioned. Yeah, there was no collusion in truth. But President Putin was the one who said, we have interests, you have interests, and that has to be understood. Our president then went off on the servers business and the Pakistani gentleman and so forth. Those, I think, are distractions that are not useful when we're talking about some fairly obviously substantial issues, like, did this foreign government, the Russians, interfere with the election, and to what degree, and what is going to be the response, what is going to be the consequence of that? And that is one that I believe is still causing a great deal of anxiety on the part of many Americans. What's next? What can we expect in the election coming up? Is there, a promise, a deal, an agreement that this violation of our process, of our system, is not going to take place again? And that, unfortunately, still remains unresolved.
I want to ask you, I don't think anybody questions I would call it a fact, and certainly whether there was Russians attempted to interfere in the election in 2016. They've been doing that for decades. There's a famous story when Khrushchev met Kennedy, that Khrushchev looked at Kennedy and said, you know, Mr. President, we voted for you in this election. And Kennedy, the story goes that Kennedy didn't really know what to say. Like, what?
Yeah.
But so in terms of Russian interference, the Internet and social media opens up avenues for Russian operatives that just like an espionage that could have never been dreamt of, the things they could do from offices inside Moscow that they could have only dreamed about decades ago. They can now do. They don't have to risk human resources. There's all kinds of things that they can do. And so I don't think that the issue of Russian interference, you know, and again, the indictment that the Justice Department read on Friday lays out at least a part of it with 12 Russian GRU officers named in the indictment. And so I think I don't think that issue's in doubt. It seems like the president gets caught between the issue of, not the issue of interference, which I believe in the past he said that he knows that they interfered. The question of collusion, and then the question of, which he maintains did not happen, and nobody's been charged with collusion yet by Mr. Mueller. And then does that make his presidency illegitimate? Which I think some would like to link that. And so he's standing on a stage with Vladimir Putin, and as you said, and this murder board goes on. How do you, if I made you the president, Tom, how do you handle those questions? How do you handle that question of, do you believe in American intelligence, or do you believe Vladimir Putin? How do you answer that as a president of the United States? You have an ongoing relationship with Russia, and now you're going to get this question. How do you answer it?
I would go back to the fact that the intelligence service provides its best information to me and to other senior officials, and based upon that, we make decisions. In addition, we have relationships based upon interests, which are sometimes mutual, sometimes not so, but relationships with the heads of other governments that are done in a diplomatic way and with a, we would hope, a personal relationship that would allow our interests to be perceived. So I don't see it a choice of one or the other. There has to be an openness to receive information or recommendations from each, and then I and the senior executive of the United States make a decision accordingly, and that is going to continue, you know, throughout my time as president. And every president would have that same situation. You have relationships with heads of other governments. You also have your own intelligence service that is providing to you their best information and evaluation of capabilities, intentions, etc. And I respect both.
Okay, so let me make you the president. You get asked this question. Do you believe Dan Coats, Mr. President? Do you believe that the Russians interfered in the election, or do you believe Mr. Putin? How do you, standing on stage, how do you answer that? So you,
I would say that I have credible information that intrusion of the election process was made by the Russians. I am still pursuing that, and if that is in fact the case, then it's going to have its ramifications, its consequences in our relationship with Russia. When that has been, to my mind, determined to be the case, then we'll pursue it. But I, at the same time, have to share with you that when that question was posed to my counterpart, President Putin, he vehemently denied it, and so that must be a part of my evaluation process as well.
And so then you know you're going to get asked this question. So, Mr. President, President Droughty, who do you believe?
I believe until indicated otherwise, both, and will then make my decision evaluation based upon, you know, further information. But until that time comes, I am not going to close off one avenue in favor of the other. To do so would not be in the best interest of the United States, and I would prefer to keep the those channels open, and I do so by remaining open to both of them.
So when you, I'll tell you what, it's not an easy question to answer standing there on stage with Vladimir Putin. So I guess the first question you have to say is, anticipating that question, are you prepared? Or is our answer rock solid enough? Because if we can't answer that question and that thing blows up in our face, we will be accused of not believing our own intelligence service. We can't have that. So your answer has to be unequivocal in terms of our intelligence service. And I think the other thing that you did, Tom, was say, I posed the question to Mr. Putin, and he, to my face, denied it. So where that leaves me as the President of the United States is that my nation has to have a relationship with Russia. My nation's relationship with Russia right now is terrible. We have to do what? I don't even know how to phrase it. We have to put this issue on a side burner and continue to look at it, waiting for Mr. Mueller's report, and I will continue to evaluate it.
Well, let me read to you what the President said. He says, I have confidence in both parties. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. Denials from liars usually are strong and powerful. So this is an editorial comment afterward. But the quote ends with, President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. So,
and he's on terra firma right there, right?
That's what he said. He's stating the fact.
Statement of fact.
I agree with my intelligence people, which is a fact. And I also say that the President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. Both of those are facts.
But he gets into trouble then. And that sounds like that was off the script. He gets into trouble, however, when he talks about, I don't know, he says words to the effect that, well, hold on, let me play him one more time. Because let me tell you, it is a, we're sitting here trying to do it after having watched it once. But I would say this, it's inexcusable for the President of the United States not to have this one slam dunk. And it's a three-sided monster. It's intelligence. Putin's answer is absolutely going to be no, it's not us, because he said it before. But the third piece is we have to have a relationship. We have to, Russia and I and the United States have mutual interests around the world, and the world needs us to work together, which is a statement of fact. And so, to me, those three pieces are important. But let me play it one more time.
With the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
All I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coates came to me, and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be. I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
It's really not, but that's okay. So when he goes down that road, he blows it up in his own face. We're going to have probably some of the GRU units that aren't named in the indictment that participated in the operation are going to now help solve the crime.
Yeah, that was one of those unforced errors that should not have been made. But let me read you also what he said. Mr. Trump touted their personal rapport. He was the one who had saved a better relationship. Mr. Trump touted their personal rapport, saying that bilateral, quote, relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of about 4 hours ago. I really believe that. So, I guess it's a case of where heavy stick or stuck to the script, so to speak, or what was I'm sure rehearsed or reviewed in the murder board. He would not be faced with the follow-up questions of what do you mean and how come and how dare you and so
right.
forth.
Right.
It's one of those things that I guess that's what one advantage of being a seasoned politician provides you, that being a businessman does not. But that we saw that in today, and with that comes the fallout that we're seeing right now.
The I'm just curious. So the in the triangle, it's American intelligence, it's Putin's denial, and the third part of the triangle is the relationship between the United States. So in some way, shape, or form, you need to articulate, I accept certainly what my intelligence services have told me. I brought it up, and as he said, right, President Putin strongly denied it. And then you have to make some kind of statement that transitions to, no matter what is the truth in all of that, the United States and Russia still need to have a relationship, and that relationship needs to be improved on, and that's why we're here today. Now, I don't know exactly the appropriate phraseology to get beyond that, because you are going to have people in the United States and elsewhere in the free world that say you at that point you have to condemn him. But pretty awkward thing to do diplomatically when you're standing next to the guy, to call him a liar.
Yeah, and there are those who are saying that because the president did not do that, he's a liar. But I agree, and I just counted down the three points of the triangle. The first two were covered when he indicated early on. I have confidence in both parties. I have great confidence in my intelligence people. But I'll tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. The third part was not really touched upon until later, when he said the bilateral relationship has never been worse than it is now. However, that changed as of 4 hours ago. I really believe that. So in a somewhat awkward way of saying, those first two points having been made, there's still the requirement for this relationship, because the alternative to that is not useful to either country, and certainly not to the rest of the world.
You know, as you were talking, I was using historical examples, right? Words to the effect that one, I accept what my intelligence services have told me. I posed a question to Mr. Putin, President Putin. He denied it. Where that leaves me as the President of the United States is with those two pieces of fact, and knowing that historically our nations have been adversaries and our major world powers. My job as the President of the United States is to have a relationship with Russia that positively impacts America's interests around the world. That's what I'm here. So if you're asking me if I can get the ground truth on this today, as I stand here, my answer to you is no. So words to that effect, in invoking the history to be able to get you there. Because I don't know what happens in the press conference. Do people actually, say that, okay, I'm going to look at Putin at this point, and I'm going to say, Mr. President, if you interfere in our elections again, you do so at the peril of your of the economic future of your country. Are you going to say that? Are you going to make a threat? Is that what people want? I don't know that that's even appropriate.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And your statement that you just read, I thought would be the perfect final point on that. As far as what the responsibility of the president is. But yeah, there are people who would want for the president of the United States to draw a red line, almost literally, between the two of them and say, if you ever step over that again, hell and fury will rain down upon you. I mean, this is, that's not diplomacy. And if that's the going in position, then why would you agree to have a meeting in Helsinki that is designed to establish a relationship that's going to be demolished by the threat based upon your believing that totally that the intelligence community. Now, what cannot be said, but what must be a part of this equation is, and God love them, intelligence folks are great. They don't always get it right. And I know that indictments have been made. Yeah, I understand all of that. But, there have been times when our intelligence community has been, dead sure about something, like Iraq having weapons of mass destruction, and in that case, the Secretary of State General Colin Powell put his everything on the line, and it turned out to be not the case. So, and I'm not saying that you don't believe the intelligence people, but to say that you're going to stand up there next to a person you're trying to establish a relationship with and call him a liar and then to threaten if he ever does that again, that is not what I would expect from any head of state, especially President of the United States.
Well, the other thing, Tom, is that I'm sure President Putin has information on American intelligence efforts to interfere in Russia, to be involved with dissidents. And so it's not like, sometimes the American perspective is we look at Russia and say, aha, does anybody think that we're not active in cyber warfare inside of Russia? Is anybody naive enough to believe that? Is anybody naive enough to believe that we don't have covert operations designed to destabilize Russia? And so do you want to do that in public if you accuse him? And knowing that, well, look, Mr. President, we know that they know about this operation XYZ. Okay, because they shot the three guys that were executing it. Okay, we know they operate, they know about Operation ABC because they arrested our guy, tortured him until he gave up these names, and then they killed them. So if we go down this road in public, it is not gonna, and he throws that in our face in public, and then he throws in our intelligence being wrong in Iraq. He talks about the way we've destabilized Afghanistan, yeah. and that our actions in Iraq and that ultimately bled into Syria has caused the destabilization of Europe. Now, those are all, if I was him, I would not be afraid to play those facts in public. Is that the hand that we want to play? So I guess Tom, for me it's a bit of a head scratcher that the president would not be able to create that triangle. Yes, I accept our intelligence, right? President Putin, yep, has looked me straight in the face and vehemently denied that Russia was involved in it. Where that leaves me is, as the president of the United States, I continue to consider that issue. But I have a greater responsibility to the United States to work with Russia and to create a positive relationship no matter what happened in the past. And that's what we're here to do today. And so I don't know if the news media accepts that, but it's certainly not an easy wire to walk. And again, what I would say is if you don't have that down solid, then why would you go to Helsinki and put the president in that position, knowing that, that's not his strong suit, ad-libbing in front of people? You've got to say this verbatim, Mr. President. Verbatim. You cannot screw with this answer and start saying stupid shit like, why would the Russians do that?
Yeah. Or to invite the GRU to help us figure it out. Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. And so it's hard for me to believe that they went in there and that was going to be the answer. And I don't know. So, but very interesting. Very interesting. Any other thoughts on that discussion, Tom, in terms of, because I do believe that if you're going there, that those three elements and the transition piece is our history. Look, we have a history that we have stared each other over nuclear weapons that were going into Cuba. The world was on the brink of nuclear war. We think, given the nuclear arsenals of each country, that it is better if the United States and Russia have an open relationship. We might not always agree on everything, but where we can, work together to promote peace and stability in the world. That's easily defendable. But yeah. I guess it's hard for me to believe that the White House would not have that, tied down with him. Now, maybe they did, and he screwed it up. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what comes out in the coming days as the White House seeks to, quote-unquote, clarify what the president actually meant. Any more thoughts yeah. on that answer? Because, the line the president was trying to walk is a difficult one for an articulate president. For an inarticulate president that struggles with the ad lib, I would say it's virtually impossible for him to walk that. So.
Yeah, and it's, the situation is complicated. Also, remember that in the one-to-one meeting, there are no note takers because of the president's concern about leaks, and I'm sure Putin probably has the same concern, not to the same degree that President Trump does, but so there's not that, if you will, the other ear of, here's what was said, et cetera, in order to elaborate, expand, correct, put a finer point on whatever you want to say. And so once again, at a press conference, I mean, it is, and that's the reason that, media training is part of the preparation for senior officers is, when the television light is on and you see the blinking red light, you better be prepared because, it's showtime and, you want to make sure that you don't, inadvertently say something that, you will regret. And I guess the final thing that I would add to that is, you can't always, use this, but silence, can never be misquoted. And, sometimes, the answer to the question is simply, I prefer not to answer that at this time, next question. And you may get hammered for that, but it's a lighter hammer than to say something that you wish you had not.
And I think that's where the president finds himself. There's no way to take that back. And again, it's just, it'll be interesting in the coming days. How the president attempts to either clarify his position or restate what he meant to say. But I agree with, I believe Newt Gingrich said it, that this is the most difficult position, that the president has found himself and the biggest error that he's made. I just find it a bit stunning that he was not better prepared for a question that everybody in his entourage knew that he was going to get asked. Maybe he was and he just screwed it up. But I'm not sure, but painful.
And especially if the indictment from, Mueller had just taken place, that would be holy mackerel, what are we going to do? But that had taken place beforehand. So that there was, and I guess that reinforced your point, there was time to prepare correctly for an obvious question that was going to be raised, and that, either it was prepared and the president didn't follow what had been agreed upon as the best course of action. I can only think that that's the case, because with guys like you know, John Kelly and Ambassador Bolton and others that are certainly you know, at the top of their game in a situation like this, you know that they had to have insisted that there be again a murder board of some sorts.
And yeah, and so if you're going to, and this is what I find quizzical, so Donald Trump's in collusion with the Russians, and he's hired John Bolton to help him do that. Okay, what?
Yeah, a real Russian file, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah,
there, what doesn't make sense about that? And John Kelly's in the room along with Mike Pompeo.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and then the other is that, okay, we're going to go back to Canada, Trump. We're going to work with the Russians to fix this election, and then to make sure that that it is not discovered or that it looks right, we're going to now cozy up to the Russians. Gee, you think that would raise a few questions of how come you're so friendly with these guys? You know, it's just, again, counterintuitive from just a tactic standpoint, Matt.
But in terms of the sniff test, and again, the president's actions in terms of the sanctions and different things that he, in fairness, in pursuit of the truth, right, in fairness to the president, he's got after the Russians pretty good, much worse than his predecessors have, relative to sanctions, you know.
Yep.
So I mean, that's just a fact. However,
yep,
he consistently falls short for whatever reason in public of being critical of Vladimir Putin. And it's troubling. It's troubling when you see him be critical of the EU. And then all of a sudden he's saying being pleasant relative to Russia. And so
yeah.
I guess.
But then he also, you know, he made up with, you know, Prime Minister May. You know, he
right,
then said the EU, okay, you know, it's still the challenge of the full business. You know, he has a way of it being, you know, blunt at the start, and then afterwards, at least in some cases, well, you know what I really meant to say, and you know, it's not that bad, et cetera. So this is a businessman as opposed to a seasoned politician. And yeah, I know he's been president for a while, and should have some of the finer points established and some of the rough edges knocked off. But, you know, we're still seeing some of those, and it's going to be, as all this is going through, it's an interesting time, but I'm reminded of the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times.
Does the president get to make errors like this? Do you ever recall, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I will here, do you ever recall the president, a president making such a public mistake in your life? Such a high.
Oh, sure. I mean,
other than George Bush throwing up, but which we won't hold against him. So,
the point of lying about the U-2 flights. You know, there's the President of the United States saying, no such thing exists until one got shot down. And then we have the problem. President Kennedy is a young president getting hammered by Khrushchev, and then the Bay of Pigs, yes. And then, let's see, what else? Well, other presidents have had their faux pas, but, you know, if we wanted somebody perfect, you know, that person, you know, left about 2,000 years ago, and so we're going to have to live with the individuals who are not perfect. They have you know, qualities and strengths and weaknesses, and unfortunately, the weaknesses are those that are magnified. It's the old saying of you know, the higher you climb the flagpole, the more of your fanny that shows. And when you're president of the United States, you know, you got a lot of fanny that gets shown when it's about to be displayed.
I guess if we categorized them into errors, I would, and this is me, I mean, you can correct me, but in terms of unforced errors, that might be one of the greatest ones I've ever seen. I would say that George Bush, when he said, "I've looked into President Putin's eyes or soul, and I see a man I could trust," right?
Yep.
People all over the, people all over the country started going for their oxygen when he said that. Like, are you kidding me? That's relatively harmless. Trust is relatively harmless when it comes to the appearance of, I believe him, based on, I don't see why the Russians would do it, right? When you make that statement, that means that you're discounting your own people and you tend to believe Vladimir Putin more. So when you do that, it looks like the appearance of that is he chose against his own intelligence. Now, I would say that's a stupid, unforced mistake, and I don't know another one that rises to that. I would say there's the other ones you talk about, Bay of Pigs. We're intentionally misrepresenting facts because in that day and age, we thought we could keep stuff like that from the media because we did on a routine basis. The Gulf of Tonkin, we were fired on. And then the U-2 things. Of course we don't have flights over Russia. What are you, crazy? How could we do that? We're not sure how Mr. Powers got into Russia in one of our uniforms. So I don't know, and I used your term, an unforced error. In terms of an unforced error, I don't know that I've seen a worse one. Nixon certainly lying publicly. The American people have to know that their president's not a crook, and Dick Nixon's not a crook.
Yeah.
Beep.
One of the things you learn is that when you're accused of wrongdoing, in your response or in your defense, never repeat the accusation. President Nixon, somebody said that you're a crook. So the response should have been, that is a lie. That is not correct. Rather than say, repeat the accusation, I am not a crook, when did you stop beating your wife? I mean, all of these things that
are you giving this a little PAO training here, Tom?
You've got all brothers that make us better, but don't repeat the accusation. It just reinforces the accusation, the negative image that someone has created that you're trying in your best way to dispel.
All right, let me get to two final questions, and I'll let you go. One, Russian meddling in the election, admitting that there's meddling, does that delegitimize his election?
No, I don't believe so, because who can determine what was the extent of the meddling and what is the target audience? How do you translate that meddling into votes that were swung one way or another? That is, gee, I was going to vote for Secretary Hillary Clinton, and instead I vote for President Trump because of this thing that I read on social media. Unless you can get some range of estimate or order of magnitude of that, then I don't think that you can lay the result of the election on whatever meddling took place.
All right. I agree with you. To me, they've meddled in our election for decades. It receives much more play. And again, then the collusion investigation is separate to that. There is yet to be any charges brought relative to collusion. And so I guess we will wait to see what Mr. Mueller ultimately finds and releases relative to that, and we can judge that. Final question. How does the president repair this?
Boy, that's a great question. And I'm certain that there are minds a lot more developed than mine that are right now churning with that. He is, of course, when you make a mistake, one of the adage that I've attempted to follow with what is in business or public affairs or especially the Marine Corps, when you make a mistake, admit it, correct it, and move on. otherwise it becomes, you know, part of the story is that the mistake was made and that the denial took place and the lies and cover-up were all a part of it. So were I to advise the president, I would say you've got to bite the bullet on this. Go forward to American people and say at this conference, here's what had taken place. In the press conference afterwards, some questions were asked that I wish I had answered differently, and I want to dispel any notion that I have lost confidence in the intelligence community, that I am beholden to President Putin. What I am attempting to do is establish a relationship with someone who in the past has been an adversary, and it's not in the best interest of the United States, Russia, or the free world, for that matter, to have us as adversaries rather than individuals who can speak with each other and respect the interests of each other.
Interesting. But, you know, there's that axiom in politics that you don't ever go backwards, right? Just keep moving and don't acknowledge the error. Just continue in your next statement, make a new statement. And so I agree with you. The way to put a period behind it is to acknowledge it. You know, and so to me, if it was me, my instinct would be to, you know, either in my next press opportunity, say that, you know, I performed poorly there. I in no way, shape, or form meant to insinuate that I don't trust American intelligence. I trust American intelligence. I trust American intelligence with my life, with the lives of my family, and with the lives of Americans all around the world.
Yeah,
and then he has to say what I was trying to do is create a relationship with Russia that I think is very important that we improve, and with President Putin standing there, I sought to carve out some kind of middle ground. I know in retrospect that I should not have done that. I want the American people to know that I do believe that the Russians interfered. I do not believe, and I know there was no collusion between my campaign and the Russians. And but I also believe that we need to have a relationship with Russia, and I will continue to work towards that end. And for whatever misstatement I make, I want the American people to know that I'm sorry for that. I in no way, shape, or form meant to embarrass anybody professionally, and I think the only person I actually embarrassed was myself. So with that said, we'll press on. We'll continue to improve our relationship with Russia. We'll wait for Mr. Mueller's ultimate findings, and we'll go from there. Or, you know, some kind of words to that effect. But, you know, Washington, D.C., if you look at the Clintons, if you look at Pete Rose, right, admit nothing, deny everything, make counter-accusations. And that's kind of that's kind of the way they do it.
But with that comes the reputation of, you know, you screwed up, you know you did. And I go back to, you know, this is not, and I think we're in agreement here, this is not designed to placate the media or political parties. This is to explain to the American people what happened. And a while back I remember reading that it is neither Christian nor American to hound to death a repentant sinner. But that center has got to say, hey, I did wrong, and the American people have an amazing ability to take that in stride and say, okay, you know, we all make mistakes, and even the President of the United States, his mistakes are more visible than anybody else's, but I can respect somebody who says, hey, I wish I would have done it differently, rather than, hey, I did it all perfectly, and you just don't understand.
All right. For the last hour or so, Tom Droughty has helped us kind of reason through what happened at the press conference, what probably should have happened, the difficult road that was laid in front of a president when he agreed to this summit, the road that should have been well surveyed, the answer that should have been well scripted. Obviously, none of that happened. So we'll pay attention. And he also gave us a lesson, a little bit of a PAO lesson in terms of never ever repeat the transgression or the accusation. So
accusation, that's right. Don't let that image last in the minds of the listener.
Sage 6-2, Tom Droughty. First of all, sir, thank you very much for coming on. I always enjoy the visit, and have a great day.
Thank you, Mac. God bless you and to all our listeners, and Semper Fidelis.
Semper Fidelis. That is Tom Drowdy here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio. More of this program coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.